Stu Does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit subscribe and hit the bell for notifications so you know when we're going live or whatever else we're doing. Glenn Beck is going to be like 20 inches away from me, too close for comfort. In just a couple minutes, here live from his ranch in Idaho. We'll go over the big stories of the day. X/Twitter is headed for new leadership. We'll look into the latest there. But we're going to start by doing the Great Epstein Files War. Yes, you might be tired of this, and there's so much back and forth, it's hard to keep track of. But it is people really, really pissed off at each other. And everyone, the new thing that you do, I guess, when you don't agree with someone is you just call them a pedophile. That's the new thing. So I hope you find somebody that in your life who gives you enough passion to call them a child molester today. That's what I hope for you. So much going on in this world. I'll try to trace back everything that's happening a little bit. You know the whole story, obviously, with Epstein. Was a central part of the campaign. Donald Trump talked about it, a decent amount. Certainly a lot of his underlings and surrogates talked about him a lot. Then Donald Trump gets into office promising to release everything they have on Epstein. They do make a major release. DOJ, FBI conclude that Epstein had no client list and died by suicide. Now, this was not very satisfying for people who, have spent a lot of time talking about the Epstein thing and were kind of sure that there was going to be big revelations that happened from this release. We didn't really get that. A lot of people who were making those accusations are now in the government. People like Dan Bongino and Kash Patel, who had talked about that before going into government and kind of made big promises about what they would be able to uncover, now are in government, have access to that, and then release something that didn't have any of that information in it. People got very fired up about it. Now we're to the point where this is being asked of the government, of people like Pam Bondi. Donald Trump kind of jumped in the middle of this question and kind of seemed a little irritated by the whole thing. Watch.
Jeffrey Epstein, it left some lingering mysteries. One of the biggest ones is whether he ever worked for a American or foreign intelligence agency. The former labor secretary, who was Miami U.S. attorney, Alex Acosta, he allegedly said that he did work for an intelligence agency. So could you resolve whether or not he did? And also, could you say why there was a minute missing from the jailhouse tape on the night of the
set? Yeah, sure.
Could I just interrupt for
one
second? Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? This guy's been talked about for years. You're asking, we have Texas, we have this, we have all of the things. And are people still talking about this guy, this creep? That is unbelievable. Do you want to waste the time and do you feel like answering?
I don't mind answering.
I mean, I can't believe you're asking a question on Epstein at a time like this where we're having some of the greatest success and also tragedy with what happened in Texas. It just seems like a desecration.
Yeah, you get the attitude there from Trump. He's a little annoyed about the whole questioning there. And there's a couple of reasons that certainly could be the case. Number one, he thinks this is just not a priority. He's got bigger fish to fry. As he mentioned, you got Texas going on. He's did the big, beautiful bill. You've got tariffs coming around the corner. Iran and Israel back and forth. Middle East, Ukraine, all the things. And just this doesn't rise to the level of importance. Now, we haven't done a lot of stuff on Epstein on the show, honestly. We've hit it occasionally when big developments have happened. But generally speaking, it's not a story I'm obsessed with. I know a lot of people really are. And I think that's fine. I think if there is, there certainly was a lot of real wrongdoing that went on here. We know that, as President Trump put it, he was a creep. There's no doubt about that. A lot more than that, he was actually legitimately terrible. And I think there is an argument to be made that it's not the biggest story right now, right? Like you can say, hey, these things are, certainly Texas, much more important than a guy who's currently dead, unable to molest anyone else, no matter how he died. So I get that. The one issue with that analysis is how, from Trump's perspective, he did talk about it in the lead up to the campaign. He did talk about releasing these files. He did say everything would come out. it wouldn't be surprising that people would be interested in the result of that document release, right? Like, he's making it seem like you're still talking about that. Well, you just released it the other day, number one. And number two, you know, you're one of the big guys that was promoting this release. You were saying that this is, you know, we're going to get to the bottom of this. Now, he did not make some of the promises that other, you know, people like, you know, I know Kash Patel did to our own Glenn Beck, made very big promises about what would be released and what was there. And so far, we have not seen that stuff. So we will see. Maybe we will at some point. Pam Bondi did eventually answer the questions asked by that reporter anyway after Trump jumped in. Here's what she had to say.
First, to back up on that, in February, I did an interview on Fox, and it's been getting a lot of attention because I said I was asked a question about the client list, and my response was, it's sitting on my desk to be reviewed, meaning the file along with the JFK, MLK files as well. That's what I meant by that. Also, to the tens of thousands of video, they turned out to be child porn downloaded by that disgusting Jeffrey Epstein. Child porn is what they were. Never going to be released, never going to see the light of day. To him being an agent, I have no knowledge about that. We can get back to you on that. And the minute missing from the video, we released the video showing definitively the video was not conclusive, but the evidence prior to it was showing he committed suicide. And what was on that, there was a minute that was off the counter. And what we learned from Bureau of Prisons was every year, every night, they redo that video. It's old, from like 1999. So every night the video is reset, and every night should have the same minute missing. So we're looking for that video to release that as well, showing that a minute is missing every night. And that's it on Epstein.
All right. A couple things there. First of all, not a good policy for the same minute of video to be missing every night for a prison. I think eventually people might become aware of that and just plan their bad activity during that minute. Not necessarily saying that anything happened with Jeffrey Epstein, because I will say, you know, you don't know. We don't know. Frankly, all the cameras were out. Supposedly they were streaming, but not recording. We went through some of this on radio yesterday. The whole thing is very, very bizarre. The video that they released, you know, was the whole that the rollout of this has been bad. And this is kind of the other explanation, right? When you're talking about what happened here, you know, one of the things Donald Trump, I think, tried to do when he was putting people in his, you know, cabinet and in other important roles, was to select people who, you know, he believed were going to be very loyal to him. That was certainly a priority, but also people who were pretty media friendly, who could communicate, who would know how to talk to an audience. I mean, I've certainly Kash Patel and Dan Bongino spent a lot of time doing their own podcasts and appearing on other people's podcasts, talking about that a lot. And you know, look, one of the things, these are different jobs, right? Most government officials are really boring. And this is one of the things I think Trump is essentially trying to solve here. He's saying nobody ever listens to these people. They're not convincing. They're boring. They just say things like, you know, you think about your typical flipping on C-SPAN. You just want, it's a nice way to fall asleep. Dan, you're not going to fall asleep to Dan Bongino or Kash Patel. They say things that are kind of like, they say them for impact, right? They're broadcasters, they're podcasters. They're doing this thing that type of person does. I'm in this industry. Like, you know, you're going to say things that you hope are interesting to your audience. And like, I think there's part of that going on here too, and that like, there were a lot of big promises made by when people were not in government, because they didn't have that responsibility. They didn't have all the facts. They didn't have all that information. And, you know, there's an argument to be made that Donald Trump, because the way he hired these you know, people in these roles, he hired people that were kind of bombastic and said a lot of stuff on podcasts, and not all those things wound up playing out. I mean, I'll give you the, you know, the stuff, you know, Kash Patel did a lot of this. Doesn't mean they're a bad guy, but like, Kash Patel would come out and he said, you know, we'll have the FBI building closed on day one. Now, I don't think that it was ever, of course, not a possibility. He's moving toward that goal. Directionally, he seemed to be telling the truth when he said that, but like, no one thought he was going to really be closing it on the first day, right? Like, we're all mildly aware of that. Same thing with, you know, Bongino talking about, you know, even this year, you know, these are the all sorts of big reveals going to come in these files. Well, now they're saying they're not there. The video that they released of the video that supposedly is going to clear everybody's mind of the, you know, whether Epstein killed himself, really just it's not going to do that for the audience it's intended for, right? The audience it's intended for are people who really believe he didn't kill himself, right? And, you know, if you're like, well, I looked at the report and it just seems like he probably killed himself, that video wasn't for you. It was for people who are and have been for a long time on the bandwagon that this guy did not kill himself. And like the video itself, we talked about this yesterday in depth on radio, does not actually show even the cell door of Jeffrey Epstein. There is a large chunk of the room you'd have to walk through to get to Epstein, which when you're walking through normally, you would be seen on this camera. But if you're walking through with the knowledge of where that camera is, you would not be seen on this video. And so I don't think this really helped. I don't think it really cleared anything up. There's a calculation to be made when you're someone who's in government. And part of that is, you know, when you have something like this that you might consider a conspiracy theory, what do you do to shoot it down? You could spend lots of time. You're never going to be able to shoot it down for everybody. There's just tons and tons of people who are out there and are going to believe this and are never going to change. And that is something that you're just going to have to get comfortable with. I mean, like, if you're Dan Bongino, if you're Cash Patel, you think nothing happened here, you're not going to be able to convince everybody. You can only check the box of releasing what you have and then let people make up their minds for their own. I think the handling of this, though, was poor. If you're going to have a minute missing from a video that you know you're releasing, the proper way to do that is to communicate that beforehand, to go to people that you might say, okay, you know, someone who you might think is, you know, rational, who is interested in this theory, someone who might be even consistent with that theory. You bring them in and you say, hey, like, this is what we have. Now, there's a minute missing here. We'd rather it wasn't there. This is why it's missing. We want to show it to you in advance. Maybe, you know, you go through a process. You get people prepared for it. Same thing with the camera. Hey, we know this camera doesn't even show the door. What it does show is 90% of the floor where you'd have to cross to get to it. That's the best we have. That combined with the other information makes us believe he didn't kill himself. But you have to get out ahead of that. And, you know, part of the reason you hire media professionals for these roles is so you don't have mess ups like this. So you have that situation going on. Of course, it escalates from there. Let me give you this too, by the way, and just for fun. This is Jake Tapper talking about this situation, basically saying, you know, backing up the idea in his mind, like they were just lying to you this whole time. They never had this and they were just overselling it.
While there might not be a list, there are certainly files that can be released. There's a trove of information that the Trump administration is right now refusing to share. Information that could well point to the powerful folks who availed themselves of the sex trafficking victims of Jeffrey Epstein. If you go, for example, to the FBI vault online, you can see that there are 22 files containing thousands of pages. Most of them are heavily redacted. Now, sure, of course, redact the names and identifying characteristics of the victims. But why not make the victim and witness testimonies public? As Julie Brown points out, there's still so much we don't know from the investigations by U.S. attorneys in Miami and in New York, witness interviews in the U.S. Virgin Islands and New Mexico. Brown writes that there's still more evidence that hasn't been published, including, quote, Epstein kept video cameras in most of his residences. And Epstein's autopsy, nor the report of the investigation into his death, has ever been made public. So while there may not be an official client list to be released, as the administration is now saying, there's a lot of extra information that is not being made public. The public, you're being played for fools here.
It's interesting. It actually kind of goes the opposite direction there and saying there is more to release. You know, it's interesting. I've read all the reporting by the Miami Herald. There's a lot of information out there about this. I read the OIG report, a good chunks of it, as we were going through the suicide and all of this. There's a lot of stuff out there. I think there's an effort right now on the left to try to connect Donald Trump to this. And look, you know, this goes to the Elon Musk thing. Elon Musk basically said at one point, hey, Donald Trump is in the Epstein files. That's why you're not getting it. And the truth, of course, is that there's a very good possibility Donald Trump is, quote unquote, in the Epstein files. What does that mean? You know, lots of people were in the Epstein files. Bill Clinton was in the Epstein files. Tons of people did business with Jeffrey Epstein, were friendly with him. Donald Trump was friends with him. What we know about all the reporting about that relationship is they were friends for a long time until Jeffrey Epstein went and was somewhat sexually harassing, allegedly, somebody in Mar-a-Lago, the daughter of one of the members. And then he was like disgusted by him and kicked him out of his life. That was like in the early 2000s, before any of this stuff was known. So that accusation, while it might be technically accurate that he's in the files, what does that mean? Does that mean that he had sex with kids? No, not at all. Now, this one escalated even further when Roger Stone asked these questions. He said, why would Bannon, Steve Bannon, meet with Jeffrey Epstein, both at his New York home and in Paris, after Epstein was convicted on sex crimes in Florida? Why would he coach Epstein for a 60 Minutes appearance? Elon Musk responded to that, says, Bannon is in the Epstein files. Now, once again, it is undoubtedly true that Steve Bannon is in the Epstein files. What does that mean? Well, he's referring to a story that I don't know that a lot of people know, and it's... Look, I will say it's a bizarre story. It goes back to, if you remember the Bannon history, he kind of rises to prominence, supporting Donald Trump very, very hard, gets actually into office with him, and then has a falling out, gets kicked out of office, right? So he's in this down period where Donald Trump is sort of, distance himself, kind of excommunicated Steve Bannon. Kind of at a low point of his life. What's he doing? He's looking around maybe for close allies that have wealth and power. I don't know. He then bizarrely becomes, allegedly friends with Jeffrey Epstein. Now, there's a major difference between Donald Trump's history here and Steve Bannon's, where Bannon is becoming friends with Epstein after all the stuff is known. In fact, he's in the middle of trying to rehab his image to get back into the public eye. So let me give you some of the details on this in case you don't know the story. A clip published by the New York Post in 2021 shows Bannon verbally sparring with Epstein. Epstein declared he was a firm believer and supporter of Time's Up, the organization, which is kind of later demolished, but the organization founded to fight sexual harassment. I made my living from old thinking, Epstein said from his Manhattan home. But the future is for the way women think, because, he was a big women's activist. Bannon pushed back. Is that the kind of sop because of all the depravity you've done against young women? He asked. And that was kind of promoted as this clip of Steve Bannon pushing back. It's funny that he's pushing back and saying, you're too pro-feminist, essentially, which is this is a bizarre conversation between two, frankly, bizarre people. But it goes on. He actually talked to Jeffrey Epstein and supposedly has 15 hours of recorded interviews with Jeffrey Epstein. Again, this all happened way after we knew what happened with Epstein and Bannon. The clip supposedly promoted a documentary, The Monsters, Epstein's Life Among the Global Elite, from Bannon's production company, Victory Films. Before Epstein went to jail on sex trafficking charges in July 2019, Bannon spent months in the financier's homes in Manhattan and Paris. He boasted that he shot 15 hours worth of video. 3 years later, no documentary had been released, and Bannon's close relationship with Epstein has been curiously memory-holed. Again, to this day, we still do not have these interviews, which is frankly strange, right, with all the attention on this. Bannon grew closer to Epstein in the summer of 2018, advising him on how to handle the myriad of legal and media investigations. They continued to spend time with each other through the following summer when Epstein was arrested in Manhattan on sex trafficking charges. The footage remains under wraps. It has not surfaced anywhere, not in the criminal trial of Ghislaine Maxwell, who was convicted of assisting Epstein's sex trafficking, nor in numerous civil lawsuits from victims. Alexandria Priet, who is a spokesperson, at least was a spokesperson for Bannon, told Business Insider in December 2021 that the documentary about Epstein would be screened probably around Labor Day. That date came and went. Priet, whatever her name is, has not responded to follow-up queries in the 2 years since, including a request for comment sent Tuesday when this article is back from a couple years ago. Bannon, who frequently speaks to journalists, did not respond to numerous voicemails, emails, and text messages from Business Insider over the course of several years requesting comment about his relationship with Epstein. He did not respond to an additional request for comment in a letter mailed to him on July 9th in a federal prison in Danbury, Connecticut, where he is incarcerated. He went, of course, through that process as well. Colorful life for that Steve Bannon, I will say that. This is a fascinating thing because, they're trying to make these things the same. Okay, Donald Trump and the Epstein files. Well, again, he had a separation with Epstein for a reason. He thought Epstein was a bad guy. He did party with him very early on before people knew this. And when he thought he was doing, he didn't like his activities, nothing to do with underage girls, but just his handling of somebody's daughter at his club. He excommunicated him and never became friendly enough. There's wide reporting on this. Okay. That has been established for a very long time, but he was never friendly with him after he was convicted of this stuff. Bannon was. In fact, he was only friendly with him after everybody knew he had molested all these girls. There's lots of reporting in this story about how the accusations are from people like Jeffrey Epstein's brother, that the idea was that Steve Bannon was going to help him get ready for big interviews and for testifying in these trials. He was helping him along. Now, the most innocuous way of reading that is Steve Bannon was down on his luck at the bottom of his life and tried to befriend someone who had wealth and power. Not out of the question at all. I don't think you do that. I personally wouldn't do that. I wouldn't want to be anywhere near Jeffrey Epstein for any reason. Steve Bannon might think about these things differently. Do I think Steve Bannon was having sex with kids? No. I don't think there's any evidence or any suggestion that that's true. So that's kind of where that all stands. It's really been an ugly chapter. And this effort to put it to sleep, I think, has done the opposite and it's backfired largely because the people around the president have not handled this very well. They've handled it like it's just a checklist item. Hey, Donald Trump made this promise. We got to check this box. Let's get everything released. Okay, fine. I got that. And that's fine. I will say, if you're going to do that, you got to be really careful with it. You got to treat it like it's a real thing. You can't just dump it out there and have all these holes because it's just going to make it go on. And then you're not accomplishing your goals. So either don't do it, don't promise it in the first place, or put it out there and make sure people understand it in context. So that's where we are with that. If there's any new developments, we'll cover it. But that's where we are on the Epstein files. Glenn Beck, maybe we'll talk a little bit about this. He's got a new show coming up tonight right here on Blaze TV. We'll discuss that with him as well next. Most people don't think about real estate agents until they have to, but when it's time to move, the person you choose can make or break that experience. Glenn Beck got tired of learning that lesson the hard way. After multiple moves and way too many bad agents, he decided to fix the problem himself. That's how Real Estate Agents I Trust was born. That's a free service that connects you with agents who are the real deal. These are not part-time agents who are your neighbor's cousin's former roommate who just got a license. These are full-time professionals who know the market. They know how to close with confidence. They've been vetted. They've been people who actually, care about getting the best outcome for you and your family. So do something about it. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com, the place to go wherever you are across the country, whether you're buying or selling a home, moving across the street, across the country, whatever it is. It's a free service to you. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Joined now by Glenn Beck. I've slid over here at the ranch to the other chair. He is doing a brand new special premiering tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern. Be sure not to miss it. It's Warning How America Elects a Socialist President in 2028. Glenn is currently eating potato chips during the
interview. I didn't think this thing was ever going to start. I don't know when your show starts. I don't know when it's on.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're showing that level of respect, and I appreciate it.
No. Actually, have you had... No, you can't. These are Vandy chips. Have you ever...
Vandy chips.
Yeah, Vanderbilt. He was the guy who actually spurred on the idea of making a potato chip.
Did he do the Al Gore thing? He didn't quite start the internet, but he...
No. He actually said, I'm tired of potatoes. Slice them up thin and make them in beef tallow.
Really?
Fry them in beef tallow. So that became the potato chips. This, you want to read the ingredients of this?
Yeah.
Potatoes, 100% grass-fed beef tallow, sea salt.
And that's it.
That's fantastic.
Wow.
And they're really good.
Really good?
Yeah, really
nice.
Good.
Nice. Where did you find these things? I've never seen them
before. My niece introduced me to them. They're really good.
Oh, very cool. Well, I mean, I'm sure they are good. I would argue maybe do in the interview, not necessarily the time
I'm
to be
just
trying
saying.
Them.
I put them away. What do you want?
Chewing into the microphone, not necessarily my favorite. Okay. You have a special tonight. It's about 2028. At least that's the result of it. A socialist president potential in 2028. This is something I'm legitimately scared about, and I don't feel like the right is
paying attention.
It doesn't feel
we're
hit that concern level.
We're still at this point that communism is funny. that socialists could never happen, that that will never win. You have forgotten that. Okay, here, let me explain it this way. Remember when we all said, wait until Generation Z, or is it X? Yeah, Gen X, gets out into the real world, going to work for these companies, then they'll learn a thing or two. And then all of a sudden, all the companies changed and they're, you know, they got cry rooms for everybody. You're like, you've got to be kidding
me.
You're
thinking more like millennials and Gen Z than Gen
millennials.
X.
Yeah, yeah. So the millennials come in and the world changes for them because they are the generation now. And just like we all thought that was stupid, they're never going to get any way. Okay, well, you go ahead in your cry room. We're going to be out here producing. They're in charge. They also, while they learned about their cry rooms, they also didn't learn about communism. They have no idea what it even means. They think communism is swell.
I look at the Mamdani potentially winning.
That's where
in
we
New
start
York.
Tonight.
Okay.
You know, Mamdani is, you know, have you seen Rolling Stone? Everybody else is bending over backwards to try to show this guy doesn't mean communism. He just means communism light. I got news. There's no such thing as communism light. There's no such thing.
Wasn't it Marx who said socialism is defined
as
by
the step
transition
in between
communism and or capitalism and communism?
Yeah. And he might have not said the step in between, the step toward communism. It the way he said it was, it meant that's the entrance to communism.
Right.
The next thing is communism.
And like, you know, you look at Mamdani's history, and I'm sure you go through some of this tonight, but it's like he's outwardly said he wants communist mayors of New York City.
Yeah.
He wants a mayor that is a communist to be the mayor of New York City.
Yeah, but he doesn't mean a communist.
What does that mean?
He means a nice communist.
Right. Oh, okay.
And the communists, they're all so nice. They all start out very, very nice. But then people get into the way, you know, and people are disagreeing.
Sure do.
And they just have to be silenced, you know, because they're getting in the way of progress. And look at what is happening. What we went through on radio today. You have the ICE attacks from July 4th. That was coordinated and guerrilla style. That's showing the left is becoming militarized, okay, in its approach. That was a very scary development that happened over the weekend. Then the second one was you had it.
This is the USAID. Bunch of the former employees basically saying, hey, well, you shouldn't have fired us because now we're going to use all of our tactics of overthrowing governments against you.
And they're saying it out loud.
Yeah.
And then the third story that we talked about yesterday was how Democratic lawmakers are now saying they're afraid of their own constituents because they're crying for blood. They want blood in the streets. Well, you know who likes to give you blood in the streets? Communists.
Even the nice ones?
Even the nice
ones.
Wow.
That's
terrible. Well, they're only because they have to.
They have to.
As soon as we get rid of these few people.
Can't break an omelet.
No. It's crazy.
Can I add another or get your vibe on another aspect of this that I'm sensing?
Yeah.
Which is this sort of happy afterglow of the 2024 election. Like this, hey, that we were in real trouble there. And we won, and now our guys are in power, and they're doing good things. And
do you know what the retribution is going to be like if they win?
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And usually what happens, Glenn, and you've pointed this out I remember you going through 40 or 50 years of history with this. Almost every time after we have a president, the next person who wins is sort of like a pushback, an opposite of the previous person.
Uh-huh.
We try to solve the problems from the previous person.
Uh-huh.
And if, you know, oftentimes it's, you know, the sort of polar opposite. And if we get the polar opposite of someone like Donald Trump, who's aggressive, you might get a soft-spoken leftist. You're going to get an angry leftist.
Yeah, you're going to get a leftist. And you might get a Mamdani, and he's a soft-spoken leftist.
Yes.
But you also, I mean, there has to be teeth involved in this. They go left, hard left, there's going to be teeth. And people have got to wake up to this. Democrats have got to wake up to this. You are in real trouble. Forget the Republic. Forget Republicans. You are in real trouble because there's not going to be a disagreement in that party soon.
So what's the order of what's the succession here, basically? Because you had Bernie Sanders leading this side of the party for a long time. I don't think anyone thinks he's going to be running for president again. God only knows he may. But is it AOC? Is there another person who you can see being the potential
candidate?
Yeah, candidate from this like socialist side.
No, I mean
she seems like the. She'd probably
seems
be ahead
like
of the poll.
Most obvious, but they can't run AOC. She's just a ditz. but they ran Kamala Harris.
They ran Kamala Harris.
I'm just concerned. Let's take it step by step. I'm concerned about this next fall in New York. If they knowingly elect a communist in New York, that says a lot. Now, that's a very lefty town, but that just shows that the left owns the Democrats now.
Yeah.
There's no rational Democrat left.
And that is still the right way to look at it. It was only a Democratic primary he won. Mm-hmm. So he's not won the election. Can I give you, this is a new poll that came out today in the New York primary. And it's an interesting one because it plays into the calculus of Andrew Cuomo as well. We talked about this before. Cuomo had a chance to drop. He has a separate party line that he locked up, basically paying for a party line before this election, just in case he didn't win the primary. He didn't win. He had an opportunity to drop out, which would maybe coalesce a lot of that vote around Adams and maybe have Adams have a chance to beat Mamdani. Because Mamdani is, I think Mamdani and Cuomo are both uniquely awful for separate reasons. You know, Adams, maybe not so effective, maybe not the greatest mayor of all time, but I think would be sincerely better. But because of, I think, polling like this, Cuomo stayed in. The latest poll from New York City is Mamdani at 35%, Cuomo at 26%. Curtis Sliwa, the Republican, at 14%, and Adams at 11%.
Jeez.
Which makes me think there's actually a larger population of anybody but Adams voters here than anybody but Cuomo. And if Adams were to drop out, do some of those people maybe go to Cuomo? I don't know. Do some of the Republicans who want Sliwa and would prefer Sliwa but realize he's not going to win go to a Cuomo or an Adams? How does this play out? Any idea?
I mean, it depends on, Adams is the one they want, I think.
Who?
The party. They don't want Mamdani, and I don't think they want, the real leaders of the party.
Okay.
You know, I'm talking the backroom kind of guys.
Yeah.
And they don't want Cuomo, because I think there's just too much baggage there. I think they will take Cuomo.
Over
the two of them. So if he's polling that well, it might be wise to tell Adams to go away. But if you have Adams and Cuomo on the ticket and Mamdani and Curtis Sliwa, Mamdani's going to be your winner.
It's unbelievable. And I think they are definitely going to be on the ballot. It's possible one of them drops out, though, and their name sits there and can only get a couple percent. You know, and we could throw this out to New York City. You know, you've had some really good runs when you've had Republican mayors. I don't know if they've noticed this. Giuliani, even at some extent, early Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm.
Actually didn't go so poorly. Maybe consider Sliwa. They won't even consider a guy.
Sliwa is a guardian angel. And he'll forever be a guardian angel. You know, it's like me. I could go do a. You know, I could go do a variety show, but I'll still be the guy who is the talk show host.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He is imprinted on people's mind, and it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean,
but you don't
look
think
at positively, right? Like, that's not.
Not at all.
If you don't know the story, like Curtis Sliwa, back in a very crime-ridden era, kind of rose
before
up.
Giuliani. The Bernard Goetz era.
Yeah, and kind of rose up as a guy who's like, I'm going to help protect citizens because the police aren't able to do it or whatever.
Correct.
And he didn't have any major controversies. He's definitely conservative. He's been a conservative talk show host as well, but he's not looked at overwhelmingly negatively, right?
He's just not looked at as the mayor.
Right.
You know, you have to be able to see the person in that role. And I don't think New Yorkers see him in that role. They see him as, you know, the crime fighter, the underdog, he'd have a better chance running for police commissioner.
Right.
Than mayor.
Yeah. You know, another fascinating part about that, I know we're deep on the New York thing, but the bad eras you'd remember of New York,
Dinkins, de Blasio, right? But yet there's not even a consideration to go to the places where you've previously had success in the city.
Because they're not that policy. That's the problem with communism. It just wasn't done right. We just didn't have the right leadership. Next time it will be better.
And that's where we go.
And that's where we go.
It feels a little different than New York City, where we are right now. We're in Idaho, and at your awesome
ranch. Saw a deer last night. You were so excited. It was like a deer right up against the window of the house.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a deer. And I'm like, oh, yeah, there's always deers around here. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of wild animals. Yeah. They walk around.
They walk
in the
around.
Wild. They're not behind cages or anything.
Naked.
Yeah, they're not even clothed. They don't have the cute little
outfits. My sister works just outside of, I don't know, the North Gate, I think, of Yellowstone. And she has heard people say, when do they let the animals out? What time in the morning?
Oh, really?
It's like, always?
Always. They just are up for you. It's great. Thank you for finally inviting me out here. Jeez,
I did it against my will. My wife was like, I got to talk to Lisa, try to get Lisa to see the sense of, why are you still married to this guy?
Oh, so there's a secret meeting going back in Texas?
No. Did I say that? No.
You did.
Of course not.
Okay.
I don't know what you're talking
about. All right. Well, thanks for having me. This is, lives up to the hype. An incredible
beautiful
place. It'd be great if people could come visit it and check it out. Don't come. Don't just come right now. But
we are talking about, we talked a lot yesterday about doing some things up here.
Yeah, in this area.
With the audience and. So
you'd love it. You'd absolutely love it. Yeah. So check it out when that is announced. Glenn Beck, a new special coming up 9 p.m. Eastern. That's already been announced. It is called Warning: How America Elects a Socialist President in 2028. As always, the best way to watch is with your own Blaze TV account. Head to blazetv.com/Stu or stu.america.com. Use the code Stu. Get $20 off an annual subscription. Glenn, thank you for having me here.
And, as always.
And appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn. Und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
The horrific numbers continue to escalate in Texas. This is, it's one of the worst natural disasters we've had in a long time. Right now, the statewide death toll rose to 111. And at least 161 people are still missing in one county. That is unimaginable. 173 accounted for statewide. This is really, really terrible. And, it's interesting because we've had we don't really see numbers like this too much anymore. I mean, you remember, of course, Katrina being really bad. We've had our cases here and there of really, really awful storms that have wiped out communities and killed a lot of people. But rarely do we see numbers that rise this high. And people, of course, will say that's climate change. Actually, our deaths, I think, from floods, from natural disasters are down something like 99%. Over the past 100 years, way, way, way down, and continue. It's not just the last 100 years, even recent memory, we've had a pretty steep decline. Floods, I think, is in the 80s as far as deaths, 85% decrease, something like that. So this has been actually a situation where we've seen much fewer or far fewer people dying from horrible floods like this. But this one just a horrible example. And again, we went through how weird it is, right? Story, mainly because, you're talking about a bunch of people sleeping in close quarters who were, sound asleep at 4 a.m. and, didn't get any of the notices which were sent out. Just a terrible, terrible outcome, and so much left to mourn in this situation. By the way, mercury1.org, you can donate if you have an opportunity, if you have the means. It'd be great if you could do that. We talked to the director of Mercury One yesterday, who pointed out, I thought it was pretty interesting. I haven't heard a lot of places pick this up yet, but she pointed out this is the best response she's ever seen in any natural disaster since she started with Mercury One, which is incredible. You're talking about a lot of it, much, much better than what happened in North Carolina as far as response goes, but a terrible tragedy in Texas. By the way, climate change still being focused on by the left, although there's interesting movement there. New headline from Politico, Democrats retreat on climate. It's one of the more disappointing turnabouts. Not disappointing to me at all. In fact, it would be great if both parties were sane on the climate. Frankly, the left is not. They are stung by the party's sweeping losses in November and desperate to win back working class voters. The Democrat Party is in retreat on climate change. Nowhere is that retrenchment more jarring than the nation's most populous state, a longtime bastion of progressive politics on the environment in California. They have retrenched on environmental reviews for construction projects, a cap on oil industry profits and clean fuel mandates. Elected officials are warning that ambitious laws and mandates are driving up the state's cost of living, which, of course, is obviously true. It's blatantly true. Everyone knows it's true. It's just the truth. We mentioned Elon Musk earlier. There's some stuff going on in that world. You know, Elon has been starting to want to start a third party. He's been saying other people are on the Epstein files. And now his CEO is stepping down. Lena Iacarino is out as Elon Musk's ex slash Twitter. She was brought in kind of as a business friendly CEO at a time where all the advertisers were pulling out because everyone was saying that, you know, Elon Musk was a Nazi. She kind of stepped in and said, I don't think that's true. I think he's talking about free speech. She's shepherded them through some tough times. Now she's leaving. Now, her statement doesn't say why. There's a lot of speculation as to why. One of the pieces of speculation is, you know, there's a new release of Grok, which, you know, has some very bizarre flares in it. Seems to be a little, I don't know, anti-Semitic and going into weird conspiracy theories. I don't know. Grok is a strange animal. I have no idea if that's true as to why she's leaving, but that is what the speculation is. And finally, Trump is tired of Putin's BS. You know, he is basically saying we get a lot of BS thrown at us by Putin. If you want to know the truth, he's very nice all the time, but it turns out to be meaningless. Now, a lot of people are mocking Trump for this. Like, how did you not know that Putin would do this? Of course, he probably did know, right? The question here is, you know, is it worth trying to go down these roads to solve these problems anyway, even though, you know, he's probably lying? You know, I guess, you know, Trump's calculus on that is yes. The fact that he has been pretty tough on Russia, you know, certainly in his first term and seemingly coming along to that that position again, not a huge surprise to me, honestly. So that's where we are with that particular relationship. So many wonderful relationships, so much close hugging and nurturing going on in the online world, in our political world. I'm sure there'll be more to come, and we'll get into that as it does. Before we let you go, we talked about Superman yesterday, and Superman, you know, all these like tie-ins to immigration policy and all this nonsense. Is it a super woke movie? I've seen some people review it and say it's not super woke. You know, some of those themes are there, but it's not too much in your face. The reviews are coming out now, and it's hard to know what to get from them. They're pretty positive. There's no audience score yet. We don't know that. But Rotten Tomatoes has it at 90% positive from critics, which is obviously a good sign. I'm not one of those people who is sure this is going to fail. It might do very well. I don't know. Maybe the movie's good. I don't know. I haven't seen it. It could be hurt by the woke stuff, but maybe it won't be. Sometimes I feel like if it's a really good movie, no, even if they put woke stuff in, people are going to like it. You know, Snow White had the woke stuff and it was terrible. So it really suffered from that. People complained about, you know, other movies, and sometimes they succeed. The other thing you can't tell with this is because it's critics, a lot of them love the woke stuff. So they might like it more because of that, if that is heavily in there. So we will see if that's the problem here. From what I'm hearing, though, that's not the main focus of the movie. See how it comes out. Also, we have a new development in the toy world. Barbie is coming out with type 1 diabetes Barbie. Yes, making the debut. Got a glucose monitor and an insulin pump. Yes, this is real. Do we have the picture? Yeah, there it is. There is insulin Barbie. I mean, you know, I don't know. It's a strange thing that we have to feel like every single, maybe you can look at it the most positive capitalist way, and they just want to make money off of kids with diabetes. And that's the best thing that we can possibly come up with, just like all the candy companies. There's some other, we have like a whole line of these particular dolls. There they are. Look at all those wonderful dolls. every single color of the rainbow. What people really want, though, is a Wilford Brimley diabetes Barbie, and that has not come out yet. So keep an eye out for Wilford Brimley's and diabetes Barbie.